Let's get soft if you wanna get soft with it.
Sometimes you feel you gotta love somebody, and that somebody is you. Sometimes we feel we need to touch somebody, touch somebody.
Hey, welcome to Emotional Hangs. That's Kurt Braunohler.
That's Joe DeRosa.
This is the podcast about adult friendship, vulnerability, sharing your feelings as you go into the September of your years. So on the count of three, one, two, three, let's get soft.
So right off the bat, I want to start off, and I don't know if this is going to be a, I don't think it's going to be an I forgive you moment, but I had a feeling, and it didn't sit right with me, and so I wanted to bring it up with you.
About
as we
me?
Do here, about you, and as we do here in Emotional Hangs.
When,
you know?
Though? We just were...
So we hung out. We hung out on... last weekend, on Saturday, we hung out, right?
Sunday
we hung out.
What the hell could have happened?
Well, this is what I felt like. And this is not something you did. It's something I did. And so that's why
you felt like you crossed the line.
I felt like, I didn't know if I crossed. I feel like I didn't cross the line. I felt, this is what I felt like.
Well, let me just tell you the relief right now, because I thought you were saying that I did something.
Oh, no.
And I was like, what the hell happened? We had a great time, I thought. Oh, okay. Well, then tell me, please.
I felt like, because with you, as different from other friends that I have, I feel like we have a very funly combative relationships where it's always trading insults, right?
Yeah.
But then I felt like at the bar, I like kind of came, I was just doing it too much to you to the point where I felt like you maybe were a little fed up with it. Like, I was just hitting at you over and over and over and
literally
over again.
Literally not at all.
You didn't even recognize it.
I didn't even recognize it. I don't remember you being anything but pleasant to me at the bar.
This is the moment. This is the moment that it was. And it's a simple thing.
Okay.
I had, like, been on you about, like, four or five different things. And then we're all outside. And you kept trying to make this joke. And I could tell that it was going to be a joke. And someone kept interrupting you, but you kept saying, you know, Bill Cosby's trial is happening in the town I grew up in.
Yes.
And you said that like three separate times.
Yeah.
And then finally I went, wait, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Bill Cosby's trial is happening in dipshit. I fucked it up. Is it happening in dipshit county? And then everybody laughed. And then you just turned around and walked away.
Because
I didn't talk to you for the rest of the day.
No, yes, you did. We
no,
went up
I
and did shots after that.
No, we did not. That was after the shots.
Well, in any case, I...
A dumb joke.
Thought it was hilarious. We all laughed very hard. I walked back after you were gone, immediately after you were gone. Our friend Brian, I believe it was laughing hysterically. I was like, that was too good of a burn. Who cares about this story anymore? And I thought it was great. I actually feel a strange sigh of relief when you break my balls, because I feel like I do it to you quite a bit too, and I have times where I'm like, oh, am I doing this too much?
Oh, good. I feel like we both feel that way, that we're like kind of breaking the other person's balls a little too much.
Yeah, it's like I never wanted to dissolve into a place where we can't have a serious discussion.
Of course.
Or exchange real information, but... Dude, I can't tell you how much I was not offended by anything.
And I didn't, you know, I assumed you weren't. It's just that we didn't talk after that, and we had just both gotten a little drunk at that point. And also, just for the audience to hear, this makes it sound like we're very, that we're not harsh with each other, because that's such a dumb joke, the dipshit county joke. But this was like the seventh one that I did in a row on you, and then you walked away. And then I was like, oh, I
no,
feel
the,
bad.
The walk away is an old New York comedy move, you know, like that I learned from like guys like Bobby Kelly and Keith Robinson and my friends from back in New York. Like, the walk away is just like fuck, you got me. Like, I got to walk away because I'm not going to whatever. And then it evolved into this thing where somebody would try to walk away and then people would block them and be like, sit here and take it. So it was always just very fun. The walkaway is very funny to me.
Like, I think the walkaway is very
funny.
It's
just like, oh, crap. All right, fuck it. I'll go fuck myself, you know? But as drunk as you may or may not have been on that day, I proceeded to get shit-faced in a way that I am not proud of. And I am ready to say this very publicly on this podcast.
Bring it out.
I do not do drugs frequently, but I do sometimes dabble in the booger sugar. I'm not against it. I don't think anybody should make a habit out of it, but you know, I'll drift in and out, you know, and I'll drift in and out of the snow drifts here and there. And it's a thing I talk about on stage. It's a thing I'm not ashamed of, because I don't do it frequently enough to feel that I need that it's a problem or something. But I'm very open about it. Like, I am a big believer in recreational drug use, and I'm not trying to pull any punches right now. Like, I think if you my philosophy has always been stay away from the big four, crack, meth, PCP, and heroin. Those are the four where I'm like, they might bring you some bad luck. But I know plenty of recovered meth addicts that are just fine, so I don't know. I probably know a few recovered heroin addicts as well, so... But my take has always been to stay away from those, is what I call the big four. But I'm a big advocate of recreational drug use. And we went out on Sunday and we got very fucked up. And later drugs came into play. And I did do my share that night. And I smoked a shitload of cigarettes. And I drank copious amounts of hard liquor on top of whatever the fuck else I had been drinking all day. And I was depressed for two straight days.
I remember seeing Joe, actually, we went for a walk on Tuesday, I think it was. Or was it Monday? No, it was Tuesday. Yeah,
that
was Tuesday,
Tuesday. Because Monday I was still, like, fucked up. Like, I couldn't get off my couch.
We went for a walk, and I had to, like, give you, like, a pep talk through for life. Like, we were like, you know, you were in a dark place on Tuesday.
Very dark. Very dark. Now, here's the bright side of it. I made a regimen because I always go to this thing where I'm like, do I need to stop drinking?
And that's and also, it's a funny thing, too, because on Monday, I was like, because I left, you know, I was only at the thing for like 2 hours because we had a babysitter and we went home.
Right.
And we did nothing that night. But then I was just so curious because I wanted to like live vicariously through you.
Right.
And I wanted you to regale me with all your stories of what happened. And you were so... you were so upset with yourself that you just simply wouldn't tell me what happened. And I was like, give me, I want to live vicariously.
I didn't feel right for 2 days. Like, I felt like I had, there's a NoFX lyric from a song on their new album called California Drought, and it's about how he's drying out.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, I just want some cocaine, but I just want some cocaine, but it's driving me insane. I think I might have broken my brain. And that lyric kept going through my head for 2 days.
Poetry of NoFX.
Yeah, I was just... I can't tell if you're being funny or not.
I'm being funny.
I like that lyric. It's relatable. It's, you know, it's not...
That's what's nice about it. It's relatable.
Yeah, it's... But,
maybe
yeah.
It's not Robert Frost, but we can
well,
get
yeah,
behind
it. What do you want it to be?
It.
What do you want it to be? All your fancy fucking Springsteen lyrics? You listen to Springsteen.
I love them.
Yeah.
I listen to NoFX, too, or at least I used to. I don't have their last album, I'll be honest with you.
How would Springsteen say it? Oh, little girl.
I don't think Springsteen's ever done cocaine.
With your dad? There is no... A man that does 2.5-hour shows night after night, there's no way he's not...
No, man. He's just fucking in shape. He doesn't do drugs. For real.
Bruce Springsteen. The man from New Jersey.
Yes. Isn't that surprising?
The barroom guy. Never did any drugs.
He didn't drink until he was like 25 years old.
All right. Well, thank
you. Isn't that crazy?
God bless him.
Hey, God bless him. That's why he can still do 3-hour shows.
So here's the thing. This is what I came to because I was like, despite everything I'm saying, I'm like, I refuse to believe I'm an alcoholic. I think I'm a single guy that goes out and has too much fun sometimes and needs to put some more restraints on his life.
Yeah.
I really do believe that.
Yeah.
I'm not justifying. I'm not making a deal with myself. I truly in my heart believe that. So the conclusion I came to on Tuesday night was you don't have to stop drinking. You have to stop going crazy. So I was like, okay, no more drugs, no more hard liquor. Hard liquor one day may come back. No more cigarettes. One goes hand in hand with the other. One leads to the other.
You quit smoking.
Sometimes I don't know. I was just like, that's it. I'm done. Because the problem with all these things those three things that I just brought up, I do not have an addiction to any of them. It's the dumb impulse I have when I have a few drinks in me and my buzz goes, just say, who cares? Let's have fun. Yeah. And then I give in and then I regret it. And I don't always do that, but I do that sometimes. And that's my regiment now. It's I'm like, I'm just going to be a beer, wine, and pot guy. Just kind of taking it easy. Just smoothly hanging out.
The 70s now.
Yeah. Well, it's so funny. Dennis Leary used to have a joke where he goes, you know what rehab was in the 70s? You're like, we used to be like, fuck, I'm doing too much coke. I got to get a case of Budweiser and ounce of weed.
That's exactly what you just said.
And I was hesitant to talk about this on the
course,
podcast.
Yeah, of course. This is making yourself very vulnerable. Like, and I almost would say what you just said is maybe the most vulnerable thing you've said on here.
I think if we can't do that on this show, there's no point to it.
Yeah.
I think we need to keep doing this. And the reason I'm talking about my new regimen is so we can follow up on the new regimen. How's it going down the line? So there are two of those things I hope to never do ever again. And one of those things being the hard liquor. Hopefully one day I'll be able to do it without doing shots.
Here's the thing. It's the shots.
I know. But it's not just the shots. It's I drink hard liquor. Hard liquor and me just get along. We just get it. It goes down so fast and so easy for me. Like, I can't tell you how quickly I can drink whiskey. I mean, I can drink a whiskey on ice in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's the problem with
And then you want another one. And then next thing you know, you've had four whiskeys over the course of 45 minutes or something like that. And it's like, dude, then you're fucking wasted. Getting wasted.
And then you do make bad decisions.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's
that. I have a version of this that goes on in my life, which is called a baby. And...
And, I was just spit soda all over myself and snot.
And so it's really like I've got, I have a built-in regulator on my little accelerator pedal. What do they call it? When your car can't go over a certain speed?
A governor.
A governor. I have an automatic governor.
Right.
And it's called my daughter.
Sure.
And so we're in the same boat now.
Well, not really.
No, not really.
You've created a loving family that you'll grow old with and have support for.
You're just going to be mad that you can't smoke.
Yeah. I did buy a Sega Genesis this morning.
There you go.
There's my baby.
Yeah.
No, but I hear you. It's kind of like, I turned 40 in August, and I don't know when this... Well, no, this will come out in June or July. I turned 40 very soon. And I just hit a place. I felt like I hit what I would call a reasonable bottom. I felt like it was a bottom the other night where it was like, you know what, dude? You don't need to overhaul everything. You just need to make some changes because you don't want to go into your 40th year feeling like this.
Yeah.
Because without question, if my 40th birthday came and I hadn't made this regiment, I would do all this shit on my 40th birthday. And then I'd wake up on the first day of my 40th year and feel...
gross.
Fucking horrible about myself.
And sad.
Yeah, and it's like, I'm just like, I don't want to feel like that anymore.
Yeah.
And I can tell you this. I know from experience, when I just drink beer, when I just drink some wine, when I just smoke a little reef, I'm a happy goose. I'm a happy guy.
Another classic saying, a happy goose.
Yeah.
So when is your 40th birthday?
August 6th.
August 6th. I'm going to put it in here. Thanks. Are we going to have fun?
Me and Vince Averill, our dear friend, and Tone Bell... we'll be having some sort of huge party somewhere.
All right.
So some three-way party. So, but on quickly to a positive. Well, that was a positive that came out of that.
That was a positive.
Yeah, but the other positive thing, and I'm very, very excited about this. And then we got to talk about your thing because you've got major updates about the brother search.
Oh yeah,
that's the closer. You can't talk about that first.
Yeah, but we can do a really big thing, and I'm just surprising you with this.
Oh yeah,
I'm going to surprise you with this right now.
Should I not say the thing I was going to say?
No, let me go, because this is going to be a big deal.
Okay,
is Lauren and I would like to ask you to be Olive's godfather.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wait, dude, stop it. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah.
I almost got teary.
He's getting a little teary.
Oh, my God.
He's getting a little teary.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
No, I won't do it. No, I'm kidding.
We want to do it because, you know, it's like neither of us are hardcore Catholic, but... you know, Lauren's mom is here and she's still Catholic. And also in my head, it's like, I don't really know what happens, but I think it would make my mom happy if she cares about that stuff. But also there's a chance, you know, there's that argument for baptizing your kid. It's just like, you know, and the idea of the Catholic Church is the kid goes to hell if you don't baptize them when they die. So it's like, I'm just going to make sure, just in case this whole lunacy is true, we're going to do the baptism. It'll be a nice little celebration and everything. But then it means if we die, you're responsible for her spiritual upbringing in the Catholic Church.
That's fine. That's fine.
We figure we'd ask like a good Italian Catholic.
I'm not even Italian, but thank you.
Yeah, I know you're not, but you're Italian.
The answer, of course, is yes. I'm speechless. I never would have seen that coming. I'm speechless. I'm like trembling a little bit, like the way I can't even explain it. I can't explain it. I've never felt like this.
You never felt like this?
I don't think so.
Really?
I can't picture another thing that's that much of an honor to be asked to do. Like, and I'm shocked. I never in a million years would have thought that, you know, it's, I'm shocked. I'm shocked.
I'm happy. I mean,
in the best way, shocked.
And I also think we wanted to choose you because we thought you would take it seriously, like you are, like you're being affected right now by it.
Well, it's, I will.
And also it means you have to take her to church every Sunday for the rest of her life. So you better not have anything more than beer and wine because you're getting up at 9 a.m. every Sunday morning.
That's the reason.
Because we're not going to go to church.
That's the real reason is you don't want to take her to church. You're like, let's see if Joe will just do it. I am truly speechless. I don't know. Yeah. I'm 100% in. I'm flattered. I keep repeating myself. I don't know what to say. I can't think of another thing that's this much of an honor that I've ever been asked.
That's
like the closest thing to it is like when your friend asks you to be his best man at his wedding.
Yeah.
But like that's not, I don't think that's in the same compartment as this sort of a thing.
Yeah.
You know? That's beautiful, man. Thank you. And this is what I was going to say. One of the reasons it means so much to me is because, you know, we live in this town, which is not the best place on earth.
No.
For finding normal people.
Yeah.
And when you find people that you do love and respect, you can only hope that, you know, that they feel the same way about you and everything like that. And you and Lauren are two people that I love and respect and consider to be real friends. Like, in the sense of like, you know, when I contemplate, what if I moved away somewhere? Oh, no, you can't. You got, you know, and you think about the people you have and you two are at the top of the list. So it's like, you know, it's you guys and Vince in Georgia and Pat Walsh. Like, Jesse, it's a small group of friends that I have here that I consider real friends. And so when those people that you love say back to you, hey, we feel the same way. It's pretty amazing. So
there you go, buddy. We love you.
Yeah, dude, I love you guys. I'm so touched. I'm so flattered.
So what bullshit do you want to talk about now?
Oh, my God. As this is so ridiculous that this is going to now be
sandwiched
up against what you just told me and what you just asked me to do.
Oh, no. Oh, no, you're going to make me regret it.
No.
Within minutes. Within minutes.
It's a joke.
I reserve the right to revoke the invitation by the end of this podcast.
Okay, fine. It's a joke I tweeted yesterday that was completely ironic and was a commentary on something. So Eliza Schlesinger, who's a friend of mine, tweeted something yesterday about how
it was an article she was quoted in.
Yeah.
And she said, when I go to the improv, I can close my eyes and any female comedian on stage sounds the same, doing the same jokes about their pussy. I'm the only female comedian with a World War II joke.
Yes. So
that's a paraphrase, but that's pretty accurate.
Basically, yeah. So I did not agree with that statement, obviously.
Uh-uh. No, I disagree with that statement so strongly. I'm just like, ooh, like, where are you seeing comedy? Go to better places. Do you know what I mean? I'm not insulting the improv. I perform there all the time. I love the improv. But like, ooh, there's
so many.
But
it's like, get out of your bubble.
Get out of your fucking bubble. There's so many female comedians doing great jokes, not about their pussies at all. In fact, I don't even know. I know like one person who has a pussy joke.
But also, too, You're asking for trouble in a situation.
Asking for trouble.
Whether or not you are hearing similar vagina jokes every night or whatever the hell it is, it doesn't matter. You're not the judge of comedy. You know what I mean?
Also, did you see that Chelsea Peretti posted a video of Eliza dressed as a vagina on stage doing a bit where she was like talking about getting shaved or something?
Yeah, and she wrote, what is this, a World War II joke? And I replied to Chelsea with like 100 thumbs ups. It was not 100, but 10. But that was one of the funniest things. So naturally, there was a lot of backlash on Twitter yesterday with Eliza. I thought it was a dumb thing to have said, but then I thought it was extra dumb that she promoted it. And then I thought it was extra dumb that she not only promoted it, that she doubled down like over and over again and wouldn't just say like, hey, sorry, like, maybe I was a little out of line. Like, that's all she had to say. Hey, sorry, I just was feeling myself
and
a little bit.
And also, sometimes when you're in an interview, you say things that you're just kind of like, it's more to say something than stuff you really believe in. I've done that in interviews all the time because you're just like, you're just talking. But, I mean, like, it's easily, yeah, you could have easily backed down on that.
Right.
She didn't.
So I tweeted, and I was scared to tweet this. I meant it 100% ironically. But I was still scared to tweet it. But I tweeted, I hate female comics, but I love their pussies. Where do I stand in this argument, right? Which I thought was a really funny, ridiculous commentary on the whole thing. And much to my surprise, and this was such a positive moment in comedy. I've been kind of down on comedy lately. I've been down in LA, and this was so positive. I got so many likes and awesome responses from comedians, both male and female, that I love and respect so much. And to the point where I was writing to people and saying, thank you for liking that tweet. Thank you for knowing I was just kidding. And people that I really love be like, of course you were kidding. It was funny. You know what I mean? Like, so that, it sort of reinstated. I was like, you know what, dude? You're always so like, think everybody's going to jump on you and say terrible shit to you. And here's the exact opposite thing happened. Like,
that's great.
You know, it was
congratulations
actually
on your real anti-woman tweet. So excited you're the godfather of my daughter. But you know what? So here's my question then, because you were nervous in the same way about last time we did a listener question and we got into like a tussle about stuff politically.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any?
Nothing.
I got some. I got some right wing people coming after me on Twitter.
Oh, wow.
From our last discussion where it was at part two.
That's interesting.
Isn't that weird? And I don't engage with those people because I think it's a hopeless case. If they want to argue with somebody on Twitter, they can go find somebody they actually personally know. But yeah, like one guy just kept at me all this weird stuff that didn't make sense. Essentially saying I was that I'm not a true progressive and I'm closed-minded and all this shit. And I was like thinking about, what did I say? I said that America has 7 aircraft carriers and that we're a country of war, which I think is an arguable position.
It's on the books.
It's not like, I don't think a lot of people can say like, no, America doesn't love war. It's like, well, yeah, we do.
That's funny because that was the guy's take, because I just wrote an article about, and I was the one debating you.
Yeah.
But I just wrote an article about world peace being impossible for a magazine. It's a fantasy. It'll never exist. And one of the things I cited was America, since the year, I think it's just 1700, has been in 80 wars, 80, involved in 80 wars. And I was like, that's just America. That's not counting the other, I think there's another 156 countries in the world or something like that. That's not counting any of those countries and the wars they've been involved in. That's just America. And that's also not accounting for just plain old regular violence, like rape and murder and assault and people biting limb fingers and shit off of other people, like lunatic, like all that stuff's not even in there. So, you know, I think it's pretty clear we're a warlike bunch.
Yeah.
Here. But you know, that's the thing. I make the mistake of engaging like people that want to attack with people that want to attack, and
because they just want to fight. And when I fight with someone on Twitter, this shows how much of a pussy I am. But when I fight with people on Twitter, even if it's a stranger, I don't ever feel good. I always feel anxious about it, and I always feel it leaves me feeling bad, and so I simply don't do it anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like sometimes. It's like, oh, I'm going for it because I cannot let this stand. But like if someone accuses me of stealing a joke, I'll go after them because I can't let that stand because I don't steal jokes. But if someone's like political shit, I don't even engage.
It's tough, man. Well, like I had, a positive and a negative with that this week.
Yeah.
The positive was related to our podcast. A listener wrote to me. This is the only response I got about that conversation specifically. A listener wrote to me and said, I love you, but the bastards love it when you don't vote. And he tweeted a couple things at me. And I just responded. I was like, hey, dude, like, I totally love that you wrote this to me. This is what it's about. Calmly exchanging ideas. Thank you. Cool. I will take this into mind. Whatever. But then last night when I tweeted that joke, I had these two women from Canada, Toronto, Canada, come at me that were being like, that thought I was being serious. And then I started writing to them, and I was like, listen, maybe instead of attacking me for an ironic joke I'm making right now, maybe go to the source of what I'm talking about. There's a woman that is being sexist to other women, and I'm making fun of that. I'm like, why would you attack me? And all I got back was, oh, you're exhausting, and like gifts of them giving me, or somebody giving me the middle finger. Or whatever. And I was just like, you know what, like...
Yeah.
Bye, block. Like, I'm not doing this. Like, if you know. But then, positive again, I had an exchange with these two other women today that were, like, very feminist and whatever. And they were like, no, this is a funny joke, but it's the sad part is it's true. And, like, this is the way a lot of people think. And I was like, totally, that is a sad thing. And, like,
that is true. That is very true. Like, you made it ironically, but that is... I mean, the idea people involved in comedy still say women aren't funny, which is like a lunatic stance.
Right.
It's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. But one of those women wrote to me this after the exchange, wrote to me today, and she was like, because I said, like, I'm really glad we could have this exchange. She's like, this is amazing. People talking calmly and agreeing and whatever. And I was like, yeah, it's very sad, like, how little this happens now.
Exactly.
Everybody is so reactionary, which is why when a guy comes at you and doesn't, whether he agrees with you or not is besides the point. if you're going to, you can't start with an attack.
No.
Nobody's ever going to go, okay, great. What else do you have to say?
If someone starts actually like calmly, and that's actually, you know, that's like a basic rule, even for any relationship, you know, if like in, especially I find in romantic relationships, if you come at someone with the emotion first, rather than calmly explaining why you were upset, then you're just going to have a reaction against the emotion and not what you're saying.
Absolutely. The best advice, the best life advice I've probably ever received, well, I don't know, the best. I've probably said that about a
million.
Come
on, could double down on it. It's the best.
But no, somebody once told me, and a guy like me needed to hear this, because this is a thing that I have worked on consistently for years, and I will continue to have to work on it. But somebody said to me once, if you go in looking for a fight, you're going to get a fight. And that was so enlightening. I was told that 20 years ago, whatever. But it was like, it's like, yeah, you can't. The second you go in disrespectful, and I've had people tell me that on Twitter, like, dude, when you talk to people this disrespectfully, they don't want to hear what you're saying. And I was like, oh yeah, you're right. I shouldn't say like, fuck you, you dipshit, and whatever. It's I shouldn't say that stuff, you know. But I get annoyed when somebody attacks me on a joke that I make.
Yeah.
And I always write back, it's a joke, you dipshit, you know. And I'm like, ah. Even though I didn't start it, I shouldn't add to it.
I personally think it's more enraging for the person who like attacks you for a joke to ignore them, to just let them know how very little they mean.
I know. And yeah. Sometimes I can, a lot of the time I can't, but I get better and better.
A lot of the time I can.
I've gotten way better.
Yeah. But. All right. Shall we move on to this last piece of information?
Yeah, let's get into the final 15-minute stretch here and hit me with the big stuff.
So.
I mean, this has been a huge show.
There's a huge show. There's a very big show. So as listeners of the podcast will know, I have a secret brother out there that I have no idea how to find. My mom has died. She gave birth to him when she was 16. Under very crazy circumstances in a convent, the Catholic Church has sealed all the records. And I don't even know what state it was in.
And she was shipped off to the convent, in case you missed this.
Yeah.
She was shipped off to a convent to have the baby in secrecy.
Yeah. And then she came back and no one ever talked about it.
Yeah.
Her brother doesn't know what happened. Her best friend in high school doesn't know what happened. I found out only kind of by accident. And now I can't ask her about it because she's gone. So I've been looking for this guy. We haven't found him. But what my wife did was my wife's uncle has a buddy who is he's a genius. He's a fucking genius and he's an artist is what he is. And I didn't really realize, like, what was going to happen here, but she just mentioned it to her uncle and asked if he would ask his friend if he wanted to take this project on. And I really didn't understand what she was talking about. Mm-hmm. The guy said, yes, he would take the project on. So I, like, just emailed him some basic information, my mom's name, her birth date, her death date, and said, like, this is the story.
Right.
So I get an email Monday night, and the guy has... In maybe 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, he emailed me a 48-page document, all handwritten, of research about my mom that he did and that he just learned from using, like, online sources of, like, records and newspaper articles and all this genealogical stuff, which I don't even know where to start with. And I just started reading it. Like, it was after The Big Sick, this movie that I did. It premiered on Monday, so we came home. I was a little drunk from the party. And I started reading it and then just started, like, bawling, crying. Because the guy put his, like, heart and soul into this. And he even said, he's like, as I learned about this woman, I fell a little bit in love with her and her, like, amazing life. And he's just talking about how, like, what a remarkable person my mom was. And so we don't know where yet she did, but he broke it down, and now we know the time frame. There's essentially two specific time frames that she could have had the baby in, because there was, like, newspaper articles about her,
right,
like, on certain dates and all this stuff. He also just, like, did a whole genealogy on my entire family, but, like, with this artistry and passion and intelligence and compassion that, like, I'm blown away by. Like, so much so that I want to visit him and just sit down with him and talk with him about it and thank him.
Where does he live?
He lives in Portland.
In Portland,
and he's an
Oregon?
Old guy. He's an old guy. I think, you know, he's probably in his 70s. And this is just what, you know, he does. He takes on these genealogical projects. And he thinks that it is possible for me to find my brother.
That's amazing.
Isn't it crazy? And I want to, it's 48 pages, single space typed. And then, like, there's pictures of my mom from when she was a kid. Apparently, she was in all these beauty pageants as a teenager.
So this is a whole world you never knew about your mother.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just learning. I knew that she was in, like, beauty pageants, and I only knew about it because, you know, my grandmother was a professional dancer. So she did ballroom dancing. That's how she, like, taught people ballroom dancing and then would exhibit it on mostly on cruise ships. And so my great-grandmother raised my mom, but my grandmother then in high school was around more.
Holy
and
shit.
And kind of, like, kind of was pushing her daughter into a similar career as hers, and my mom pushed against it, and that's why she became a nurse. She just wanted to help people as opposed to being in this trash of a industry that we're in.
We help people in our own way.
Yeah. We help people in our own way.
That's the justification.
Yeah, we help people for money.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, that's incredible, man.
It's incredible. So now I have
a moving story that this guy, that's amazing.
It's absolutely amazing. And I'm overwhelmed. You know, I still have, I'm only on page 9, you know, because it's also like reading it is like, you know, an emotional battle, you know, because it's all about my mom and it's all about all the stuff I didn't know. And so I have to like go really slow with it, but it's like, it's going to take me, I'm like, you know, few weeks to like get through all of it.
Well, it's an amazing thing because it lets you not only celebrate the mom you know,
yeah,
as your mom, it allows you to now see her in a different light as more of her own human being versus
right
your mom.
Yeah.
It's did you ever see the movie Mother?
No.
With Albert Brooks?
No.
I love it. It's Albert Brooks, Debbie Reynolds.
And Albert Brooks write it?
Yeah, he wrote and directed it.
I think he
wrote it with his, her name's escaping me, but I think he might have written it with his writing partner that he wrote a lot of his films with.
Okay.
But but it's a great Albert Brooks movie. It's very sweet, and it's about how he goes through like a second divorce, and he goes and lives with his mother to try to figure out like what's wrong with him,
uh-huh,
with women, and like rebuilds his like teenage bedroom exactly as it was and like lives in it again.
Really?
Like, yeah, and it's really, really funny.
I want to watch it.
It's great. It's a really fun. It's a great movie. It's a really nice movie. No stress. You know, it's very light.
Yeah.
But anyway, there's a line where he says to her, "I'm not." Spoiler alert. I mean, you kind of know where it's going through the movie. It's obvious that they're going to find a happy place together.
Yeah.
But he says at the end of the movie to her, like, she reveals all this stuff about her life that he never knew about. And he's like, for the first time ever, I don't see you as my mother. I see you as a failure. <You know? laughs> And it's such a funny line. But it's because he feels like a failure and doesn't understand what's wrong with him. And he's like, and that's just a comedic way of him saying, like, I see you as like a person.
As a human being.
You don't have to be infallible.
Yeah.
Like, you're a person that's allowed to make mistakes. Like, and I watched it with my parents, and my parents fucking loved it. And it's very relatable. Like,
I'm going to watch it tonight.
Especially if you come from a sort of ethnic upbringing, as they call it. Like, you know, there's really funny scenes, like, with his mom, like, how she freezes all of her food and she thinks that means it can't go bad and stuff. I love that movie. So yeah, check it out. But that's the whole thing. I feel like it'll be very relatable to what you're doing right now in its own weird way, you know?
And I'm still waiting for the ancestry thing to come in. Did you do that as well? No, you only did 23.
I did it years ago.
Oh, okay.
But yeah. Ancestry didn't. Years ago, Ancestry was just. Oh, no, wait. I said I had to log back in to see if anything new had been.
Yeah, you gotta do that. Yeah.
I forgot. I'm
Jeez.
Sorry.
Come on. Get with it.
I'm sorry. It's been a big week. Kicking coke habits, becoming a godparent.
You got a lot on your plate. I get it. Well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Joe.
You should, well, in closing, I mean, talk about the big sick. You didn't really discuss that at all.
The big sick, actually, this will come out the week after it opens. So Big Sick opens June 23rd, limited cities, July 14th, everywhere. And Big Sick was written by Kumail Nanjiani and his wife, Emily Gordon. It's kind of based on their life. And Holly Hunter and Ray Romano play Emily's parents, and I play his roommate and friend. And I was also the on-set writer for it. And so I feel like, I feel a deep connection to the movie. I was on set every day giving everybody jokes for it. And I'm really proud of it. I'm really happy for people to see it. So go check out The Big Sick. Also, I'm going to be at the Alamo Draft House in Washington, D.C., July 14th and 15th. And then Joe and I are going to be doing some emotional hangs in Vegas in September 27th, I believe, for Scoops Fest. Mm-hmm. And then in November, we'll be in Houston. We're going to do a whole run of shows.
Yeah, Houston, Austin, and Dallas, right?
Houston, Austin, Dallas, and maybe...
Maybe a couple other ones. We're
maybe
waiting
some
to
Louisiana
see
dates
what we can
as well.
Do, yeah. Well, that's great. Congrats on The Big Sick. I hear it's fantastic.
Thank you.
Nice work. Congrats to all of you involved with it. I haven't seen it yet. I look forward to seeing it, and I will get a huge kick out of seeing my friends on a giant movie screen. It's going to be so weird.
Yeah.
I don't think, like, I know people that have been in movies, but, like, I don't think I've ever seen, like a friend, like, up on a movie screen. Like,
yeah. That's the first time I've seen myself up on a movie screen.
That's going to be crazy. I mean, I look forward to that. That's going to be a nice experience. So I'll check it out. What do I got? When does this come out? Well,
wow.
This weekend.
Wow, you really deflated there.
Sorry, this weekend. This comes out Wednesday. This very weekend, as in starting tomorrow, I'm in Jersey, the Stress Factory.
It'll actually be next. It's be the next week. It won't be this Wednesday.
Oh, the guest one will be?
Yeah.
Okay. Last weekend, I was at the Stress Factory. I'm back now. The weekend of July 13th and 14th, I'll be in Philly at the Punchline Comedy Club. The week after that, I'll be at the Cap City Comedy Club in
Austin,
Texas. The first week of August, I'll be in Amsterdam, co-headlining shows with Kyle Kinane at a festival. I can't remember the name of it, but you can find it if you Google our names in Amsterdam. And
Heineken
and then,
Ice Chilled Comedy Fest.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
That's not it. I don't Google that.
And then the other stuff Kurt mentioned we'll be doing. So thanks for tuning in. Feral Audio.